We bring you now The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth. Now here's the minister, Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr.
Good morning, and welcome to The Living of These Days. I'm going to start our service today with these opening verses from the letter of James. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes in the dispersion, greeting. Count it all joy, my brethren, when you meet various trials, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all men generously, without reproaching, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways, will receive anything from the Lord. Well, you know, that's rather typical of the way in which the Bible talks about doubt. It is a source of instability that undercuts the faith of individuals and communities. It's hard to find a good word for doubt in the Bible, at least directly. Indirectly, I think we might make a case that doubt has an honored place there. In any case, in my sermon today, I plan to do something rather strange. I'm going to put in a good word for doubt. Of course, I want to make it clear at the outset that I'm not recommending that people try to build their lives on doubt. That cannot be done. Doubt is a negative force. You can only build your life on a positive force, on faith. Many people keep the mistake of trying to begin with religion by making lists of all kinds of things that they cannot believe. But that's a dead end. To get anywhere in religion or in life, you have to start with something that you do believe. Well, now that I've made that point clear, let's listen to our duet. Our theme this morning is not one that you are likely to come across very often in church. My sermon has no specific text for the reason that I know of no place in the Bible where the word doubt appears in a favorable light. To speak of the courage to doubt sounds rather like speaking of the courage to sin. I recall that recently I came across a heading in a religious article that read, "The Sin of Doubt." Indeed, in most forms of religious orthodoxy, doubt is the one sin that is deemed to be completely incompatible with a Christian life. In every other respect, it is acknowledged that even a saint may fall into some imperfection, but doubt concerning the approved doctrine cannot coexist with a genuine faith. Well, of course, we have to admit that doubt is a negative force, and that there are forms of doubt which are dangerously destructive. For example, there is that kind of doubt which is a kind of insidious distrust of other people. We have a classic instance of this in Shakespeare's drama of Othello, and of Othello's mounting distrust in his wife Desdemona. When doubt assumes that form, it is hardly ever useful or creative. Again, there is a kind of habitual skepticism, which is really nothing more than a way of avoiding making personal commitments. There are people, and I'm sure you've met them, who consider themselves to be unusually bold because they poke holes in everything and commit themselves to nothing. In actuality, these people are timid. They lack courage. They're afraid to exercise the courage that comes with conviction. By cultivating a blasé cynicism, they never have to take any risks. This sort of escapist doubt is not very useful either. It must be admitted, too, that doubt can be misleading. It can deceive us. Expressing doubt about religious teachings, for example, can be a way of camouflaging some personal problem that we do not wish to face up to. The person who walks into the minister's study, for example, announcing, "I'm all upset about the second coming," usually has something else on his mind. Not always, but usually. Lloyd Averill of Kalamazoo College has written, "To say I can no longer believe in God may only be another way of saying I have lost confidence in myself. To say I can no longer profess faith in Jesus Christ may be only another way of saying I'm confused about the meaning of existence and the purpose of my own life." So when one expresses doubt about the validity of his faith, it is always worthwhile to ask whether it may not really be his own validity as a person which he has come to doubt. There is destruction and there is deception in doubt. Let that readily be admitted. But there is danger in repressing doubt too, in trying to hold it back and hold it down. Doubt is like guilt. It is a red flag pointing to something broken in us, a kind of marker in the highway of our lives, that there's a detour there, there's a problem, an obstacle there. In the case of guilt feeling, it is our unity with goodness that is broken. In the case of doubt, there's something broken in our unity with the truth. Now, we all know that feelings of guilt may become sick, and yet without the capacity to feel guilty, we would never be aware that anything is wrong with us. Moreover, to repress guilt can lead to all sorts of nasty and unhealthy consequences. Well, so it is, I think, with doubt. Doubt tells us that we are separated in some way from the truth. To repress doubt does not overcome that separation. On the contrary, it merely drives doubt underground with dire results. One result is a pig-headed anti-intellectualism. For example, one may denounce education and the pursuit of knowledge for fear of exposing oneself to doubts. Another way in which repressed doubt expresses itself is through fanaticism. Because a person cannot bear the anxiety that comes with doubt, he literally closes his mind and his heart to anything but a very narrow and rigid set of ideas. To those ideas, he will admit no qualification or opposition. He makes something limited, which is to say his human understanding, into an absolute. In practice, he also absolutizes his understanding of that limited thing. But underneath his doubt is still there. The fanatic tries to defend against that hidden doubt by extravagant claims for his own movement and extreme rhetoric attacking other people. In time, he may even be driven by his repressed doubt to war and persecution. A few years ago, one of our local churches had outside on their bulletin a message that said, "Oppression is rooted in fear." Oppression is rooted in fear. Well, the fear of doubt is one fear that lies behind the fanatical persecution that often occurs in the name of religion and of social reform. One of the most profound analyses of the relation between doubt and faith is scattered through the writings of the late theologian Paul Tillich. In one place, Tillich notes that in contrast to some of his disciples, Jesus never acted in a fanatical way. He would not call down thunder from heaven on the Samaritan village that refused him welcome. Tillich suggests that Jesus accepted doubt concerning his own work, a doubt that breaks out on the cross, and yet this does not break his essential oneness with God. Well, I think we can see Jesus facing up to doubt in the Garden of Gethsemane too. So then, all that we have said so far comes down to this. You cannot cope with doubt by evasion and repression. Doubt can only be met effectively by courage, including the courage to exercise doubt so that truth may prevail. For doubt can serve the interests of truth. I said that I could not find a favorable use of the word doubt in the Bible, and yet it is clear that many of the men who wrote the Bible were vigorous doubters. The author of the book of Job was such a man. He doubted the traditional teaching that virtuous people always prosper and that a life of crime never pays. He told the story of an ideal citizen who was subjected to suffering and grief far beyond anything that he might reasonably deserve. The author of the book of Jonah was a doubter. He doubted the traditional understanding of the Lord as a national God who showed only wrath to Israel's enemies. He told a story about a prophet who was sent by God to be an instrument of divine mercy to that dread superpower, Assyria. Doubt is a negative force. You cannot base your life on it. That would be a fatal mistake. Doubt does the work of a wrecking crew, not the work of a construction crew. Nevertheless, doubt does enter into the creative process. It clears away an inadequate structure so that we may put something better in its place. Doubt plays some role, I think, in most positive achievements in human life. Think of the whole realm of scientific discovery. There is an established theory, let us say, that the sun revolves around the earth. The theory seems to be founded on the wisdom of the best authority. It is believed by everybody for centuries. But then a man comes along and makes certain observations and certain calculations that seem to call that theory into doubt. In time, he develops a new hypothesis, which has such tremendous results that it is spoken of as the Copernican Revolution. Without the creative doubting of scientists, it is doubtful that we would ever have moved out of the caves. In a similar way, doubt performs a liberating role in the life of religion. There is a man, a German man, who begins to doubt the way in which the church system of his day is being understood and applied. After a while, his doubt becomes so strong that he breaks out in rebellion. This lusty, passionate, Gothic soul of his bursts open in a kind of volcanic eruption that pours the hot lava of spiritual rebellion down all the highways of Europe. And yet out of that agony, out of Martin Luther's tumultuous questioning, something new and positive is born. Doubt is an element in every creative human advance. It is an ingredient of all human progress and growth. We fear doubt, of course, as the enemy of faith. And doubt has to be disciplined if faith is going to be given a chance to grow. But doubt can be the servant of faith, too. It is doubt that knocks over the idols, those limited things that we worship in place of the infinite mystery that is the living God. The doubt forces faith to rewrite the creeds, those combinations of words that always and without exception fall short of conveying the meaning of faith, and which sometimes seriously distort that meaning. A doubt keeps faith humble. It helps faith to avoid the megalomania of fanaticism. A doubt forces faith to reach higher, to embrace a more perfect ideal, to forge a clearer concept, to fashion a purer kind of dedication. True faith, in contrast to mere passive acceptance, is always a venture that includes within itself the risk of doubt. The difference between the spiritual outlook that we try to cultivate in Pilgrim Church and that outlook which is sometimes called fundamentalism, that is a difference that I think is very important today. That difference does not lie in our believing less, or in our believing less wholeheartedly than fundamentalists do. Rather, the difference lies in our being ready to accept the force of doubt into the life of faith, so that faith may take that venture of courage. But how do we find the courage to doubt? Well, partly in that positive thing that lies within doubt itself. Even though it's negative, there's something positive there. Paul Tillich observed that doubt is paradoxical, that when a person affirms openly the complete meaninglessness and despair of his life, there's something positive there in the honesty of that affirmation. In that honesty, the honesty of radical doubt, he finds meaning. Well, that's a complicated idea, but perhaps it's put more simply in words that we recall better by the poet Tennyson, who made the same point, I think, when he said in his poem In Memoriam, "There lives more faith in honest doubt, believe me, than in half the creeds." In sincere doubt, there is the positive power of sincerity. And from that positive power, we can find courage to go on doubting in the hope of believing. But hopefully, we do not live only and always at a place quite so extreme as that. Along with our doubt, there is some positive faith. If that faith is genuine, then it can provide us with the courage we need to welcome doubt as the companion of our faith. And that is especially so when we remember that true faith centers not in our own believing as such, but rather in that power beyond ourselves that challenges us to believe. Now, there are times when a person finds that everything in life seems doubtful, including those religious values and beliefs that he once found so important. Suddenly, everything definite that he believed about the church or God or the Christian life or even himself just evaporates away. Now, if there is true faith in that person, he can let that happen for a while because he knows that his faith does not depend upon what he thinks about the church or God or the Christian life. If he has known a true faith, his life is open to a power that grasps him from beyond himself. He can say to himself, well, I find I am about to pass through a dark tunnel where all my beliefs are blotted out in darkness. And yet I pass through with confidence, because there is something stronger than my beliefs that carries me through this darkness. And when I get to the other side, and I will get there, I shall enter the light again. My faith will take form again. It may take a somewhat different form, but it will take on a shape that is useful. For now, I find the courage to doubt the old form of my faith, because I still trust that there is a power that can kindle faith in me again. Well, may we all discover that ultimate trust, which cannot be expressed in creeds, but is something that is felt in the depths of our being. For if we live by such trust, we can find as well the courage to doubt. We need that courage. We need it especially today, when tired spirits fall into easy answers, and when despairing souls grasp at fanatical extremes. Let the church stand for the courage to doubt. God is not honored by that fear of the truth which represses doubt in the name of religion. Rather, God is honored by that faith which believes he is with us in our doubt, directing our doubt in the service of the truth. Doubt is often a lonely experience. Faith is individual too, and it can be lonely. But faith flourishes best when it is nurtured in the life of community. And that's why it is important to worship with other people. If you do not have a church of your own, we invite you to join us in worship at Pilgrim Congregational Church on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock. If you have questions about what kind of church we are, just drop me a line and I'll do my best to answer them. Now let us join in a closing prayer. Our Heavenly Father, even as we seek to trust in you with our whole heart, give us courage to correct and purify our beliefs by the creative power of our doubting. Because you are the truth, we need not fear what truth reveals. So give us courage to doubt in the living of these days.
God of grace and God of glory, on thy people pour thy power. Crown thy ancient church's story, bring her but to glorious flower. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage, for the facing of this hour. For the facing of this hour.
You have been listening to The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, with Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr., minister. For copies of today's sermon or comments on this program, please contact the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth, 55812. And please join us next week at this same time for The Living of These Days.